He said that we are not going to allow the white racists to keep beating us up in dark alleys. We are going to make them do it in the glaring light of television.
I'm Sarah McConnell, and today on With Good Reason, how the fledgling nightly network newscasts influenced the civil rights movement. Aniko Bodrakozy is the author of a new book which looks at the crucial role the network evening newscasts had in shaping attitudes about race relations during the civil rights movement. Bodrakozy is a professor of media studies at the University of Virginia. Her book, Equal Time, Television and the Civil Rights Movement, also explores how the television entertainment industry grappled with race in prime time. What do you see as the link between network coverage of the civil rights movement and public perception in it?
Well, what was really significant for me in looking at the way that television news covered the civil rights movement is the kind of audience reach that television news was achieving in the early 1960s. It was really unprecedented. And for the civil rights movement and the campaigns, for instance, the Birmingham, Alabama campaign for desegregation, these could be seen as, well, these are local issues. These are issues in Alabama. But television news helped to make those campaigns and that movement a national movement.
Describe one turning point that you noticed where the nation's attention was riveted and maybe influenced by network coverage.
One of the key moments is the 1965 voting rights campaign. Martin Luther King and his organization, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the SCLC, decided to go into Selma to show how basically impossible it was for the majority African-American population to register and vote and be fully American citizens. And there's a confrontation on the bridge. Police, sheriff's posse, and nonviolent marchers. And it was a horrible confrontation. Tear gas, truncheons, and this is all being filmed. The footage ends up being shown in prime time. The televising of that confrontation on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, most historians will argue, leads almost directly to the passage of the Voting Rights Act 5 months later.
And there's a famous Martin Luther King statement where he took advantage of the spotlight. What was King's statement about this? He said he was going to use television to his advantage.
He said that we are not going to allow the white racists to keep beating us up in dark alleys. We are going to make them do it in the glaring light of television. And it happened over and over again. The Selma campaign is one of the kind of seminal moments. The Birmingham campaign of 2 years before was another one of those moments. And what the movement was able to stage, and they did it quite knowingly, is they were able to stage these confrontations that elicited violence. But it's violence, obviously, from racist Southern segregationists to indicate the moral stakes here. Television is a visual medium. Television needs to have exciting images, and these were very exciting images.
Were the networks cheerleaders for the civil rights movement, or is the picture more complicated?
What I found actually looking at a lot of coverage, a lot of news specials, is something more complicated. To the extent that the civil rights campaigns were focused around issues that were already kind of settled in the law. So school desegregation, that was settled law. Supreme Court decided. So the issue of school desegregation was not considered controversial by news organizations. Where things get more complicated is around the question of protest, marches. Television news reporters tended to be more uncomfortable about that. I think there is this visceral discomfort with protesting black bodies and black bodies that are not staying in their place. And even when we're talking about these are reporters who, for the most part, are sympathetic to the goals of the movement.
So you've written about noticing time and again a preference on the national television newscasts for what you refer to as the worthy black civil rights subject. What do you mean by that?
Yes. A worthy black individual, someone who is not part of a movement, who is being victimized, either because he or she's not being allowed to vote or not being allowed to go to university. Let me give you an example. Here's a clip from a documentary called Mississippi and the 15th Amendment. It was a CBS documentary in 1962 dealing with the question of voter disenfranchisement in Mississippi. And I want you to listen to the way that the CBS News reporter introduces David Robertson.
Each time he has been told that he is not qualified because he failed to pass Mississippi's literacy test. Technically, then, David Robertson, science teacher, college graduate, master's degree candidate, and a fellow of the National Science Foundation, is illiterate.
So here we see this exemplary African-American Mississippian, Cornell University grad student, member of the National Science Foundation. I mean, how can someone like this not be considered worthy to vote? I don't think that the network news divisions were doing this consciously, but they tended to focus on African-American subjects who fit into the norm of middle-class whiteness.
But that helped the movement, right?
Oh, it absolutely helped the movement. Of course, it helps to build a sense of sympathy, the righteousness of the cause. And had the networks focused on far less educated, much poorer subjects, then there may not have been as much sympathy because, you know, a poor black Mississippian who, you know, lives in a shack, middle-class white Northerners particularly, may have felt less, you know, certainly less in common with them.
Let me go back for a moment to the March on Washington. There was a primetime special of the day's events of this momentous march. And you write that the most famous words from the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech aren't in there. What do you think that was about?
When I was at the CBS News archive watching this special, he's just coming into the I Have a Dream section of the speech. There's a cut to the commercial, and I keep waiting. We come back from commercial. I'm going to hear the rest of the I Have a Dream speech. But CBS doesn't do that. So the most famous, most consequential speech of the 20th century is basically left on CBS's cutting room floor. Because, I mean, now we're so familiar with this speech, but in 1963, the white news media had not heard King speak like this. What King is doing is he's not talking about politics. He's doing almost like biblical prophecy. I mean, he's quoting Isaiah. So I think in 1963, because this biblical speak is not addressing the political issues, I think journalists didn't know what to make of this.
Not only have you researched the influence of network television on the civil rights movement, the entertainment divisions of the networks also had to figure out how to portray African Americans in programming. Tell me about the evolution of black characters on popular TV shows of this era.
Right. In my book, I start with the early 1950s, the early days of network television. So in the early days, we have black representations that are servile, in the case of Amos and Andy, buffoonish, kind of throwbacks to the minstrel stage era. And by 1953, those shows are off the air. And basically, by the mid-1950s, there are no black faces on network television. There's a brief attempt in 57 with Nat King Cole. He has a variety show, but the networks can't get advertisers for it. So primetime entertainment television remains a whitewashed medium until the mid-1960s. So we've got the pressure to start integrating primetime. And the way it starts is with worthy black, what I call civil rights subjects. So I Spy, one of the first TV shows, hugely successful, pairing an African-American spy with a white spy. It's Bill Cosby in his first major television role. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He speaks 11 languages. A couple years later, Julia. So Julia comes along in 1968, starring Diane Carroll. Beautiful, accomplished. She plays a nurse. She has an adorable, precocious 6-year-old son. And they live in an almost effortlessly integrated lifestyle with white friends and coworkers. It comes on air in 1968. 1968 is one of the most turbulent, tumultuous years in American 20th century history. Riots in the inner city, you have King's assassination, you have the rise of black power politics, the Black Panthers, and a lot of African American critics argued, yeah, this is not telling it like it is. But interesting, a lot of white critics were saying the exact same thing. This is not telling it like it is.
How were African Americans depicted on shows after Julia?
By the time we get to the early 1970s, we get the rise of the ghetto comedies. So Good Times, Sanford and Son. And in some way, they were kind of an answer to this integrationist paradise representation. Because if you look at Sanford and Son, it's an all-black world. Good Times, it's an all-black world. That show, in fact, did deal with important contemporary issues in the African-American community. So it dealt with issues of gang violence. It dealt with issues of hypertension in black men.
So what do you see as the difference between coverage of civil rights issues in the early 60s and television news today?
Well, one thing that I noticed, which is quite different from certainly cable news today, TV news in its early days was basically trying to show the journalistic establishment, which basically means the print press, that we are serious journalists too. What I was really impressed with was just how seriously the news division took its job. There was no sensationalizing, relatively little focus on human interest stories. I think one of the really significant consequences of these earlier days in network news is that this kind of approach really assisted the goals of the civil rights movement because it elevated that movement into national consciousness in a serious and non-exploitative kind of way.
It's a long walk to D.C., but I got my walking shoes
on. All the way to Washington.
I can't take a plane, bus or train, cause my money ain't that long.
Aneko Bojorkozy is a professor of media studies at the University of Virginia. Her new book is Equal Time, Television and the Civil Rights Movement.
Come